What's the first image you see when someone says they live a nomad life? You can even close your eyes to see it better. Is it someone sipping margaritas on the beach and occasionally going online to work as well? Well, let's find it out together with Rihanna Hilkema today. She's been a nomad for 11 years. But this story is not just about living your dream life. It is also about chasing one dream in particular so hard that at some point all the beauty of what's around is fading. Rihanna has been juggling her nomadic lifestyle with fertility treatments for almost 6 years. And it was one of her most challenging experiences. This is a story of a strong woman who, despite her pain and many, many disappointments, raised above her sorrow, took responsibility of her life, and now is on a mission to raise awareness around infertility and help women who are, just like her, childless after IVF, and helping them to redesign their life and business for success and happiness. This is a Non-Cool People podcast, and I'm your host, Kat. 3, 2, 1,
go! You've been traveling like so much. You are nomad for more than 11 years. How do you introduce yourself to people who have never seen you, don't know who you are, and what you do?
I think that is really being a nomad. That has changed my life so dramatically. So if I would identify myself with something, it would be being a nomad. Yeah.
Being a nomad is a desire for many people, I think. We see those cool pictures and we just imagine the life that you always travel and you don't. Yeah, like live
always on the beach, sipping cocktails.
Exactly. No. Share with us.
Well,
tell us.
Yes,
tell
well,
us what's the real life.
The whole day, sitting and sipping cocktails. And no, that's not the real life. But to be honest, I never aimed to be a nomad. It kind of, my life had some turns and I ended up being a nomad. And I started back in 2011 when I left the Netherlands. I left because I broke up with my boyfriend. We sold the house. I got fired. No, not kind of fired, but there was a problem with my job that they couldn't give me the contract that they promised me. So in like a time frame of 4 weeks, I had nothing suddenly. No boyfriend, no house, no job. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do next? I have now all the freedom to choose. And so I decided to be an au pair for a couple of months in Paris. So I packed all my stuff, drove to Paris, and the 3 months became a year. And after Paris, I was not done yet. And I flew to China in Shanghai. I got there a job in an international school. So that was kind of the moment that I became an expat. And then from being an expat in Shanghai, then I lived for a couple of years in Madrid. And I was there the director of the Dutch school. And then slowly, like over time, I moved to several places, several countries. And I was always stuck with this job on location because of my job as a teacher. So I was stuck in a certain city, most of the time the capital. And to be honest, you know, I lived, for example, 3.5 years in Indonesia. Living in Jakarta is now not really the experience you want to have when you're living in Indonesia, with all the traffic and the pollution and everything. So all these kind of things. And stuck always with this frame of a school year. You have to be there in August and you can leave if you want to go somewhere else back in August again. And well, then COVID hit, everything came online. From teaching in a school, I went to be teaching online. And then I opened my own online school. I started a coaching business. I started a consulting business. And then slowly, slowly, everything just was set in a place that I didn't need to be in a certain location for a certain time frame. And that was the moment that me and my husband that I met meanwhile during my travels, that we decided, whoa, now we can go wherever we want. We're nomads. We're like digital nomads, the fancy ones. But that was kind of overwhelming, to be honest. It's really a luxury problem because I was always like, I apply for a job and I knew that I would end up in that city or in that country at least. And now it was like, we can go everywhere we want. Like, there's nothing holding us back. Where do we go? Okay, how do we make our list? So we started with like, okay, we want to be in a Spanish-speaking country because we love the Spanish culture, the language, everything. So that cuts down some countries. And then we said, we need to be in the time zone with America and Europe because most of our clients are from there. Okay, so the side of Asia, that doesn't work. So it was either way on the North America, South America side or in Europe, in Spain, for example. We were comparing countries to each other and we were like, yeah, I lived in Spain for 3.5 years. And I said, I've never been really in South America, so I want to check that out. And that's what we did. So we went to South America and we started in Mexico, in Central America, actually. And then we moved south to Colombia. We did Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay. And now we're back in Mexico. And at the end of this year, we're going to go to Argentina. And in the meantime, because that was your question, like, what do you do the whole time? In the meantime, we created our life. Like, so the first couple of years when we started with our business, we were working 24/7. Seriously, in my dreams, I was still working, making new plans, strategies, changing things. And it was like 24/7, even when we were going somewhere to hike or to, we were still talking about business. And then since I would say like 1.5 years, we found a really beautiful routine that we work from Monday till Thursday and we stop working at 4. So at 4 p.m. we go to the gym together and then the evening is off. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we are off. So we talk about business, but we have no calls. We don't have any commitments. Nobody needs us in those days, Friday till Sunday. So that gives us also the opportunity to travel and to move. Because in the beginning, it was really challenging. Like if you want to, it's sometimes hard when you focus all your energy on your job, you forget the beautiful places where you live. But when you're only sitting on the beach and doing like fun things, you're not so focused on your business. So we needed to find a way that we could balance them both. And I don't think actually balance is the right word. I would say align both of them, that we have the best of both, but in a way that is not compromising any of them. So that's what we do now. We work Monday till Thursday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we have the option to move, to travel. Like all our travel days are also always in the weekend. We move to another country. We just moved last weekend, for example, now to Playa del Carmen. We're on the Caribbean coast right now. So it's lovely. It's really tempting with the beach in front of the door too. but we know we now have like really clarity on how we live and how we enjoy life. Because that's it, isn't it? Like you need money to live. But you also need to enjoy that money. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. If you're working so hard and you don't enjoy it. So, yeah. Actually, this is living the good life right now.
In your story, I heard that sometimes the really bad things that can happen to us can lead us to something much better. Oh. Of course, we might not think that way at that particular moment. But always, if you take that responsibility and courage to make the decision that I'm gonna change for better, right? There are always two ways we can go. Either I'm going to sit in the corner and cry, or I'm picking myself up. And for people can take time, of course, it's necessary. Yeah. But then to make the decision that I'm gonna live my life the best as I can. Why I wanted to talk to you, actually, it's maybe not so much your nomad lifestyle, even though it's very interesting for me. But what always brings this curiosity about people in me is how people can find something positive or make something good out of their, I don't even know how to say this word. It's not an unfortunate life situation, right?
Mm-hmm. But circumstances, maybe.
Circumstances that didn't work out. And in you, it was helping women who cannot have kids and supporting those women who went through infertility. Yeah. Because you have this story. You have a long 6 years of trying and then finally finding out that, no, it's not going to work. Tell us, how does one find strength to support others and help others after this long journey of lots of tests and waiting and another test and waiting?
Well, I think it starts first with yourself. This whole journey, the 6 years that I've been dealing with infertility and done several treatments, and we started just naturally thinking, it's going to be so magical and romantic and blah, blah, blah. And then, well, you end up after 1.5 years in the clinic talking about how to move forward because it doesn't work naturally. And then we did 6 IUIs, we did 3 IVFs. And every time there was this like huge disappointment, and the whole time this roller coaster of having a lot of hope, like it's going to work. And all the doctors were optimistic. I was super young and healthy and active, not smoking, not drinking. So it's going to work this time. And then again, after like the whole procedure, ending up with an email, imagine, they don't even call, an email saying like, stating not pregnant, and then picking yourself up. So where do you get the strength from? You build it over time, I think. What I've learned in life is what is really important is to not chase people or things, but to chase your feelings. And the moment that I left the Netherlands and I arrived that first day in Paris, I remember that I promised myself I'm never going to be doing anything that not makes me happy. I want to be feeling happy every day, and I'm going to do everything what I need to do to make that happen. So do things that I like, be surrounded with people that I enjoy my time with. And so when a couple of years later, I met my husband, and then a couple of years later, we started talking about children. It was so natural in a way that like, it's like the next step for a lot of people. So also for us, you have a relationship, you get married, and then the children come. And when it didn't work out, that was really hard on me, because you have this certain, I think this is where I want to come back to, it's expectations. We put a lot of expectations in our life, in our relationships, and the things that we're doing, and a lot of expectations are also be put outside of ourselves that we don't have control about. And that's been this whole journey about like every time you set expectations of how it's going to go, and then it doesn't work out, and you're being so super disappointed, and then realizing every time to try not to set expectations and see what happens. But that is freaking hard, I can tell you, and especially with such a thing that seems to come so normal to a lot of people. I mean, in those 6 years that we've been going through infertility, there was like, my brother got 2 children. My parents became grandparents again. My other brother has also 2 children in the meantime. Then I had a friend, she found a boyfriend, got married, got a baby, and is divorced. And here I am 6 years later. And that's something I think also what's really challenging when you're going through a struggle, through something that doesn't work out, is that you look at the outside and you compare other people's outside with what you feel inside. And I felt so lonely, and I felt like I need a family to live my life. And why can I not have it? Why, I do everything good, so why do I not deserve it? And then you compare those really deep feelings with seeing on the outside everybody having family lives, and you only see the positive thing, of course. And this comparison is just setting you up for a lot of sadness and confusion. Mm-hmm. And because it is not about comparing, and again, that's what I said also about expectations. When you setting expectations in a relationship or towards life, like I do this so I expect this, then it just sets you up for failure. You can have hope, but that's something different than expectations in my idea, because expectations are something you cannot control. So instead of expectations, what I really try to do in those 6 years is focus on all the things that are in my control. And that took me a while. But at one moment, I've always compared going through infertility by climbing a really high mountain. Mm-hmm. And on the top of the mountain, there was the baby. So that was what I was working towards. And I knew I put all my energy and all my effort in it, and I keep climbing up, even though I fall back so many times, I just keep climbing up. And on the top, then I have my baby. And then one day I realized, if I reach the top at cost of everything, and I'm there, and I have this baby, but my relationship is broken, I have no friends or family around me because I broke all this contact with everybody because I could not emotionally deal with it anymore. I have a job that I don't like. I don't make enough money to live the lifestyle that I want to live. There's no way in supporting others. Then I'm like, whoa, that's not what I want. And that's funny because all the things I'm now mentioning are things that I have are in my control. I can find a job that I really like. I can build a relationship that lifts me up. I can have relationships with my social connections that give me energy. But the only thing that I was focusing on was that baby on the top. And then when I started seeing this in perspective, like you have this big circle with all these different fragments, and I was thinking there's just one fragment of all of them that I'm highlighting and that I'm working on. And if it doesn't work out, I literally have nothing anymore. And that was for me like the big shift. And I was then 4 years in my infertility journey that I decided I need to focus on all the things that I can control. So if it doesn't work out, even though I didn't want to think about it, I didn't talk about it, I never said that sentence because mm-hmm. inside I really hoped that it would. No, actually, I was kind of expecting that it would work out. I mean, IVF, everything is so controlled, every step, so cannot go wrong, right? But I started focusing on all the other things. So I started creating my life again. I started seeing all the beautiful landscapes, which I didn't see in those first 4 years, even though I was still traveling all around the world. Yeah, and then last March, so that was like after 6 years of infertility journey, we went to the clinic and the doctor told us IVF is not possible anymore because my egg count is really low. So the only way would be going to other options. And that's something that we were not ready to talk about in that moment. And, you know, that's something else. That's like medical decisions, personal decisions, everything else. So in March for us, it was suddenly done. And then I was sitting there, well, sitting, like crying in bed for a couple of weeks. And I was really, really down. But I had friends who picked me up. I had a husband who wanted to be there for me. And he knew that we would have a great life with or without children. And he showed me that we were good together. And I every morning I still woke up with like a sense of joy because I was able to do this job that I love so much and this coaching and this consulting and everything that I set up over the past years. And this kept me going. And I think if there's something that I can tell or share with people who are going through struggles or hardship, don't focus on one thing. Focus on the whole thing, because this one thing might not work out, but then at least you have a whole other part of your life left, which still can give you energy and the love and the drive to keep living and keep creating a beautiful life. I mean, really, if you would now tell me, okay, you have to give up your whole life and you live in the Netherlands with your husband, but you have a baby, I would do it without a doubt. Because this is so deep. This dream is so deep. But this is not going to happen. It's not possible anymore. It's done. So now I'm living on all the other things that I've created that's still giving me a lot of joy in life.
I just can applaud your strength and mindset. How do you keep that mindset in those moments when, you know, you have all the dreams in the world, even if it's just one big dream? You live the life of your life, right? You travel, you have beautiful scenery, so you have created jobs, whatever you like. And then this day comes when you understand that the most important thing that you wished for is just crashing under your feet, and you are not gonna get it. I can't even imagine what to compare it with. But then, as long as it takes, everybody heals in their own ways.
Yes.
But to take yourself out of that and switch flip that page and say, okay, I have created this life and I'm now going to enjoy it despite what have happened to me, plus I'm gonna do something for others, you know. I'm gonna transform my experience into support to others. And tell me, is it also, and I think I know the answer, but is this help for others also helping to heal
this journey? So much. It was, I started with one-on-one coaching during my infertility journey with women who were planning to start IVF, explaining things, coaching them through it, if this was the right decision for them. It's never up to to anybody outside. It's always to the person themselves. And that was something that I really learned throughout the journey as well. If you're going through fertility treatments, you're crossing so many boundaries. And like, it starts with, I'm not going to start treatment. And then you get into treatment. Yeah, but I'm not going to do IVF. I'm not going to inject myself. I'm not going to. And then before you know, you're there. And crossing boundaries is really hard on your own mental process, because I say no, but I do yes. What kind of message do you give to yourself? When does it stop? When is there an end? And all these kind of challenges that are coming up. And so I started with the one-on-one coaching. And then when, well, my whole own dream collapsed, I took a break of it because I needed to take care of myself. And I needed to see how we would go further and move on. And I had to realign everything, like find my sense of meaning again. That sounds really weird, because I have this beautiful life that I created. But for all those, I'm now 35, for all those 35 years, I've always had this idea. It's just not about like if I'm going to become a mom, it's about when I'm going to become a mom. So all my decisions, even when we decided to get married, we were, I was already calculating like, yeah, but if we get pregnant, I don't want to have like an 8 month old belly in my, or an 8 month old baby in my belly. And so we should marry a little bit earlier, or we should, like, all the kind of decisions that we made were based with the idea, like, we're going to start this family, we're going to have kids, we need to think about how our life is going to be when the kids are there. We kind of, certain things that we're doing now, we're not able to do that anymore. We kind of just go, bam. So the whole time you're busy creating this, and suddenly when this day in March on a Friday morning, I'll never forget that moment, suddenly everything was empty and black. And there was like this huge sadness of this dream that never gonna be happening.
How do you get out of there? So let's say somebody who's listening now to us maybe is going through a similar journey. How do you pick up yourself? What's that one thing you say that really helped you?
Yeah, having people around me. Having the right people around me. That was really important. Yeah, my husband has been like my rock throughout this whole journey. I had a couple of people that I met on Instagram. It sounds really silly, but they became closer to me than my friends that I knew for 20 years already, because they understood me. They went through it the same. They were in the journey. They got it, and it was so easy to talk to them. And that's been really helpful. People who get you, who get your story, where you can be sad and they don't judge you for that. They don't try to fix you or pick you up, because that's something over the years that I've seen with the outside world. They're like, okay, now you've been sad for long enough, but there is not sad for long enough.
How do you decide what's my long enough, right?
Yes. And there's going to be a moment you're sick and tired of crying in your bed and you're wasting your life. And that's the moment then you can pick yourself up. And for everybody, this moment is different. And something that I was really confusing for me in the beginning was like, yeah, but if I move forward, then I neglect all the losses. I can be happy and I neglect it. No, I'm happy, but I'm still sad for this dream that I was never been given, that I wanted so badly. But I still have a great life, not at cost of each other. And when I reached that moment, it just shifted everything. And that was also the moment that I realized we need each other in this journey. People who are, and for me, it's infertility and now being childless, not by choice. For other people, it's coming out of a journey of cancer, for example, and going through the treatment. And then the doctor say, okay, you're cancer free. I can imagine those people also walking around and everybody's like, okay, she's back normal. Mm-hmm. Cancer is gone. But they've changed. They've changed completely. And also for those people, for everybody who's going through a struggle, like find the people that are getting you and preferably one step ahead so they don't drag you in it, of course. And that's what I've been doing now in the last couple of months, really being there for women who who get this news, who had to make a decision, who ended up being childless after infertility treatment, after a medical procedure. So many things that can happen that you end up being childless. And then being there for them, being there to listen to them and sharing our stories and knowing that you're not alone. I think that is so important in whatever struggle you're going through. You're not alone. Yeah.
Do you feel sometimes that people, maybe not those people who went through something similar, that close circle of yours, but maybe even some relatives, still are being weird about all this situation? You know, when something happens and you are kind of back to the society and being with friends and people, do you ever feel this weird awkwardness between you, that maybe they are pitying me, or they are looking at me like, ah, poor she cannot have it, they come with the kids, and then you're like, ah, maybe we shouldn't go with kids there? And how does it make you feel at this situation?
I feel it's more the other way around. People are so uncomfortable when I mention it that they either way shut down, they completely ignore it, or they try to fix you, and they come with, but did you try this already? Mm. Or they just tell you, yeah, you can just adopt. And to be honest, all these kind of things are so hurtful, because being neglected feels like I'm not worthy enough, you know, and then you're being challenged the whole time with what you see on the outside, of course. Are people trying to fix you? It makes me feel guilty, like, did I really try everything? And I know now that I need to step up above that. And I know that this is like this innate thing of people to, they just want to help. Mm. They just want to, they don't want you to see you sad and being in misery, and they want to help, but
they just don't know how to approach this conversation, because they probably never lived that. And by trying to help, by the advices, they don't realize they harm more than they help. Yeah. So what person in your situation wants really to hear, you know, not you can adapt, not that you are going to be fine. What would you like to hear?
It can be so easy as just, I'm here for you if you want to talk. That must be so hard. All these kind of things without judgment, and listen. Because if you don't know, I think then it's really important to be curious. If you don't know, listen and see what's going on, so you know for the next time. And then again, you know, everybody is going through this kind of struggles in their own way. So even if you hurt somebody, because that's what I heard a couple of times. Oh yeah, my friend also went through IVF, but now she's living a great life. I'm like, yeah, but that's not helpful to everybody to hear that. Sometimes you just want to be heard. We all want to be seen and heard and valued and understood. And these are like the basic things. We want to belong somewhere. And people saying these kind of things, they put you out of this belonging. And there is this big disconnect. And I think with like all this technology and social media and everything, the most beautiful gift you can give to somebody is this connection, is time, is listening. And it's not about like fixing people. And I catch myself sometimes as well when a friend of mine is in a relationship problem, and I'm like, but maybe you can do this. Oh, wait, you don't like this? Step back. It's not about you. It's about their experience, and they need to go through this. That's the other side of the story as well. They need to go through this. And me telling, you know, it's so hard to change yourself. How do you in earth think that you can change somebody else? So it's, for me, this whole journey has now been about raising awareness around infertility and childlessness. Like, know what it is before you judge or before you talk about it. And like, I'm writing a book now about, for moms, how to support their daughter who's going through IVF. Because as a mom and being so close with your daughter, it's, again, it's this whole feeling of you want to help her. You don't want to see her, like when she was a little child and she was falling on the ground and she had her knee all open and blooded, and you wanted to fix it and help her and make her feel better. And that's what I see moms doing now as well with their daughters, but they can't. They can't. And they just need to be there and not give advice, not minimize the situation, not putting more hope, more expectations, just being there and making this whole journey a little bit lighter, if you can say it like that. It's like I read somewhere a story about it's infertility is like running a marathon on really, really horrible shoes. And what you can do, this person doesn't have to run a marathon. You choose to run a marathon. You can stop whenever you want, but you don't want to because you want to end at the finish line. And what you can do then as a person, as an outsider, is just be there with them, run with them, talk to them, change their shoes maybe, like make the whole journey a little bit lighter. You cannot talk them out of it. That's their decision when they say, okay, I'll never make the finish line. It's enough. Or I do make the finish line, but there's not that price that I thought that I would have. No, and again, just being there with you. And the best people to be surrounded with when you go through a struggle are the people who are in the same situation or, like I said, one step ahead, because they really understand.
Mm. Wow, it's really beautiful what you're doing. You're an amazing person, really.
Yeah.
You got me here that you're writing a book for moms whose child is going through this. You know, it's not for women who is going through this, but for mom, how can you support? Because the kind of task of mom is always to fix our children's problems, right? Or at least to soften them. But in this such a sensitive moment, you cannot live it for them or you cannot protect them. You just need to be there. And it is the hardest thing, I think, for a mom to do, just to watch your child suffer. And like being feeling helpless, but you can be helpful by doing those right things. Amazing. Wow.
That's beautiful.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I heard from somebody, that's not a good book deal. There are not so many people who are going to buy it. I'm like, it's not about that. It's just one mom who reads this book. Gosh, it's going to be a life changing. And again, and this is what I really feel like, I want to do good in the world, and I want to, you know, the stories that are always going out there is like, it's been worth it, all these injections have been worth it, because they end up with the baby in their arms. And for me it was not, and there are many more women like me it is not. To be honest, this is not the stories that are going out there. There are more women ending up childless after IVF than they are with children. But this is not what we see. What we see in the media, what we see with all the famous people, they showed a baby and said, yeah, it was really challenging because we had IVF, but look, here it is. It worked. And that was also the naivety. I don't know if that's the right word. I was really naive when I started IVF, the first IVF. I was thinking, okay, now it's going to work. I didn't want to do this, but well, at least at the end, I'm going to have the baby that I wanted. And then it doesn't end up like this. I feel I need to do this to make it worth it for me. That this whole journey I had to go through to now be able to help other women. And something cool that I'm going to do, for example, what I really missed when I came out of the infertility journey and I became childless was these women that I wanted to be surrounded with, but nobody's talking about it. I mean, nobody's putting pictures on Facebook with their bruised belly and saying, oh, too bad it didn't work out, or like with their empty arms. Or so many women, we're traveling, otherwise we would have done the same. So many women, the nursery room is ready already when they start with IVF. And then what at the end? Like, you have that nursery room there. You don't post pictures of an empty nursery room on Facebook or Instagram. So I was really looking for this community of people who have been through the same. And I'm organizing retreats now for women who are childless not by choice, and in March is going to be the first one. I'm super excited. It's going to be a small group, like 7 women and me. There's going to be a grief counselor, because I know not everybody is at a certain stage of that journey, of course. And my husband is an ex-soldier, so he's going to set up the camp, make sure that we're going to go hike. We're going to hike for 4 days on the Appalachian Trail. It's going to be awesome to literally move our body and talk about our stories, move, talk about our future and move and keep moving forward, because this is what I wish for everybody going through this and through any struggle, to find the drive and energy again to move forward and not like waste your life. Stop. I've wasted so many years in this journey, and I really want to say stop waiting for things or people start chasing those feelings, start chasing things that are making you happy and that you can control. I think that's the most important part. Be focused on the things that you can control and stop waiting and start living.
I'm so grateful that I've met you, that there is this positive side of the social media. And we can meet amazing people like you. And Rihanna, what's your definition of a cool person?
Oh, what's a cool... Somebody who creates her own life on her own terms, that's for me a cool person. Somebody who says, I like this, I want this, this makes me happy, I do this, and I just focus on it. No matter what the rest of the world thinks of them, this is what makes them happy, and they follow that. Follow your heart, always, I would say.
Next time you catch yourself comparing other people's outside with what you feel inside, pause, give yourself a hug, and keep creating your own beautiful life. And if you find something useful in this episode, please let me know by sending an email to unknown.cool.people@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram. And I see you next episode.